This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around the city, and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and to find your next favorite artist, band, album, or song. And of course, if you like what you hear, please make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Young the Giant. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Sam Sumpter at WFUV. Sam, it's not every day that we get to interview an artist or a band that is really close to our own personal heart, and this was that for you.
Oh, man, Megan, I was so excited for this one. I have loved this band for a long time. I was introduced to them. I mean, when their first songs came out was during a really formative time in my life. I just graduated college. I had an internship when I was in my car a lot, and I was driving around blasting My Body and cough syrup and was just such a fan of the band. So very much a surreal moment and a pinch me kind of experience to just, you know, realize that 15 years later, I'm sitting here at a table with them at a radio station in New York City.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
They have a new album that, as we're talking, is about to come out. But by the time the episode drops, it will already be out in the world. We're going to hear three live songs. Two of them are from the new project. One is a bit older. What's the first song that we're going to hear in this session?
The first song we're going to hear from Young the Giant is Ships Passing.
I'm the gray rock when my mind goes black. Needle in the eye of a satellite. I'm holding my breath, just holding my breath. I'm up to my neck and the water's rising. Sewn on my chest and my thoughts are violent. Dressing room when everything here makes me think of
That was Ships Passing, a nautical ditty from Young the Giants. I'm Sam Sumter here at WFUV with all five members of a band I've loved for a decade and a half now. Guys, how are you doing?
Doing well.
Doing great.
Wonderful.
I'm going to start off by just saying I'm not going to play this cool. I've been at WFUV for about 3 years, and this is probably the session I've been looking forward to the most, because when y'all's debut album came out back in 2010, I graduated college in 2011, so I got a car. I was just driving around Austin with my windows down, my body, cough syrup, just blasting through the windows, and it's so trippy and surreal and amazing to now, you know, again, 15 years after the fact, be here with you. So I know what the last 15 years have been like for me. This is a very broad question, but what have the last 15 years been like for y'all?
Well, thank you, first of all, for listening and being a fan, because it still surprises coming back to this. You know how many people have put a lot of meaning into the songs, and it's the reason why we can still do this. So thank you. But the last 15 years, it's been a roller coaster. We've kind of grown up as a band, as human beings, as individuals, as musicians. In some ways, like, you know, the first record, we were 20, 21 when we released it. And it was in a lot of ways like a public puberty, as Jake has called it sometimes. Yeah, we were learning so much about ourselves. And as musicians, we kind of have gone in this crazy full circle place where, you know, first record we recorded mostly live with Joe Ciccarelli. We kind of got more of our feet sweat into production, producing ourselves as bands. We all produce artists. We all have our own studios. We have a band house together. And that kind of culminated with American Bollywood, which is our fifth record, and very, very heady concept. And also we were doing a lot of new school recording techniques. Getting back after that record was done, it felt like, you know, a huge weight off our shoulders, you know, thematically. It's so much of the things I wanted to say that we wanted to get back to the joy of being just in a room together. So in a lot of ways, the last 15 years, we've kind of come back full circle to where we started in the beginning, but with a lot more experience under our belt.
And the new album, Victory Garden, your sixth, this is the arrival of that full circle moment. I've listened to the album. I love it. And it reminds me of that first album. There's like a sense of like joy and freedom and just like this quality that just, it just hit me in that same like nostalgic part, or that same like, I don't know, part of wherever the music hits you in your body that some of those first songs did. How did you make the decision to then come back and do it this way? And what was it like to be in the room together working on these songs?
Yeah, I think that for this particular record, we were all really wanting to get in the room together by nature of, you know, we had just done a record throughout COVID, so we had kind of done everything a little bit more piecemeal, a little bit separated. So we would try to write in our band house, which we just actually got rid of. We had kind of a communal band studio in Los Angeles, and we were trying to write this record. We realized that our lives are in Los Angeles. So, you know, all of these four guys, these amazing fathers that are sitting in front of me, have young children. So we'd kind of get together, and then it would be difficult to kind of really focus in and make this record. So we decided to go on these writing retreats, and we went to Joshua Tree in the desert. Mm-hmm. We went to Idlewild, which is in the woods in the mountains where our friend has a studio out there. And we just got an Airbnb together and had kind of studios nearby that we booked out for like 4 or 5 days. And we did four writing retreats, wrote the entirety of the record all together, just kind of for the love of the process of being together and being creative in that way. We were just really kind of wanting that feeling. And then when we went to record the final takes, we kind of inserted as much of that live in a room feel together as possible, which is, you know, the closest to the first record that we've recorded in a very long time.
Yeah, just to add on to that, when we went into the studio with Brendan O'Brien, who's a legendary producer, we basically like had these songs written. We did a little bit of pre-production with him, and then we went into the studio. We recorded 15 songs, and by the end of each, it was a three-week period, 5 days a week. By the end of every night, that song that we recorded that day, like I think we started with Evergreen, which is the first track off the new album. By the end of the night, we had pretty much 90% of what is being released, like what you're hearing as a mastered version, we had at the end of the night. So we really recorded it very quickly and very concisely. And I'm really proud of that. And that really reminds us back to when we were working with Joe Ciccarelli on the first album, the self-titled. So it was a very quick process just because, yeah, I think we just really trusted one another in our ability to play and to write and to produce, to co-produce this record.
Yeah, and you've gained that trust again, playing together in the same formation now since the beginning. And I imagine it was such like a treat to go on these writing retreats, to have like this time together. And it's such, as someone who's not in a band and just works a lot with them, it's such like an exotic concept, like, oh, we're going on a writing retreat. We're going to go off into the woods and just like make art. And I have like visions of you guys like in bunk beds together. And then, like, but can you
walk me? That's bordering on fan fiction there.
not that far off. There is some of that on the internet. When we first started living together, like as a band, we lived in a 2-bedroom apartment in Hollywood. So like Jake and I had our beds in the studio. So it was really not that far from a bunk bed. These houses were a little bit bigger, but still we wanted everything to feel really communal. And like we were eating, you know, all of our meals together. And anytime we had out of the studios, a lot of just like conversations and catching up. We spend so much time together on the road, but you need to kind of like insulate yourself a little bit, because you live on a bus together. And obviously there's a lot of quality time there, but when you're in a house like that and with the express purpose of writing together, it just kind of got us all sort of rowing in the same direction. We do really like our communication, I think, is really great, and like that's why we've been together for 15 years. It's kind of a rare thing, I think, in for bands, but like you do need to have that time together to kind of be able to like finish each other's
sentence
burritos. And like that,
for it.
That's like that type of stuff is so helpful in the studio, because you can have an idea that'll be like maybe 80% there, and when you have four other people that you trust to kind of take it across the finish line, it makes everything faster, everything easier. That collaboration is such a huge part of it.
And I just keep thinking like 5 band members picked to live in a house.
it's like on Real World. Yeah. Like the Real World. Yeah, you guys remember that? Yeah.
We would be so boring on Real World, though. They'd have to like edit all this like drama into it.
Yeah. That's a good thing as a band, though. Yes, less of the drama. I want to talk a little bit about, or more rather, about the album Victory Garden, starting with the title. So I actually heard about Victory Gardens a few years ago because a friend of mine who's in a band here in Brooklyn, TVOD, they named their EP Victory Garden like several years ago.
Oh, shit.
Oh, copyright infringement. No. But all to say, like, I had never heard of the concept of a Victory Garden until he explained it to me. So I would love, in your own words, to, you know, have or to explain what Victory Gardens are and how you came across this concept and decided that this is the theme and the title of the album and the first line in the first song, I believe, as well.
So on our last writing retreat in Joshua Tree, it was about a year ago now. It was the first week of spring. And we were all kind of reconnecting before we went into the studio for what would be the last writing retreat. And we're just looking up at the stars, talking about just life. Fran was letting us know that he was expecting a second child. Aww. And it was just a really beautiful moment, and we just talked about many things that night. And we had most of the record written at this point, and I kind of just brought up the idea of like, oh, I've heard about this thing called Victory Gardens. I'm explaining it to the guys, and it's like these kind of wartime gardens in World War One and Two in England and in the U.S., where it was kind of encouraged for communities to come together and grow food. And I think in World War II, it accounted for 40% of the agriculture that we grew in this nation during that time. But I was kind of taking it, I was like, you know, for me, it was very emotional. Like, I have a daughter as well. And I was just like, you know, having a toddler, like seeing the world through their eyes, seeing their excitement and tending that garden through its seasons, through the tantrums and the times when, you know, you have all the endorphins from getting that smile and that validation. That to me was like tending that garden. That was like my victory garden. And I kind of brought up the sentiment to the guys and didn't think that it was going to be anything. It was just the next day, I think we ended up writing Evergreen, which is a song about legacy. It's a song about, it's like when society grows great, when old men plant trees for shade they will never sit under, for shade they'll never enjoy. So that kind of idea. And we wrote that song, and that kind of felt like the culmination of the writing process for that album. And I think like we just at some point, I don't know whose idea was it. It was like maybe Eric or someone was like, that should be the album title. And we kind of just went with it, and we kind of built this world around it. And some of the other songs like Bitterfruit, Different Kind of Love, some of these other songs kind of worked with that theme, and it felt really cohesive. So that's kind of where that came from. I don't know if anyone else wants to.
No, just all to say that if you can't see this, Pam's crying right now.
I'm crying so much.
I know. I think it is really a beautiful concept too. It's like this idea of community, of doing something for the greater good, and then doing what you can do, right?
I mean, Samir had like we had this imagery of the. Because it's not all just like sunshines and rainbows, right? There is darkness and this idea, and you know, with all the other things we were talking about going on in the world, we were trying to find this idea of radical empathy, right? This idea of finding resistance to all this BS going on through doing what we can with the things that we can control. And what I was speaking about is like raising my daughter, which is hard. And we have some imagery idea of like, the flower blooming from this crack in the concrete, right? And you see that walking the streets of New York or whatever. You just see like, how could life come from this like desolate, you know, like concrete? Like, what is this? So, Jake, wanna?
I was just gonna say, New York actually was like a huge wetland estuary back in the day. It's like one of the most important like migratory paths of birds. And it's funny that nature still wants to be there. And just a good reminder that sometimes we pave over things like that. And yeah, nature really prevails.
Yeah, you go to Prospect Park, there's like hundreds of types of birds still there. It's such a wonderful oasis.
It still is. Yeah. People are doing there's a big effort to stop like skyscrapers going up, essentially because they're bird killers. But yeah, it's still there. I just got to move around it a little bit now.
And one of the first Victory Gardens in the country is like right across the street from here.
Really?
Yeah.
Our manager just sent us an article from the garden across from here during COVID in the early, I don't know, it was early 2020. There was like this resurgence of the Victory Garden for communities and for students who went out to kind of come together and bring the community garden back. So it feels very fitting being here for that as well, for the album release coming out.
Yeah, and I think that is like, you know, if you go back, let's say just to 2020, for example, and like the last 5 years, like one of the, you know, I don't want to say silver lining, but like one of the beautiful things that has come from all of the horrible things that we've all, you know, witnessed and experienced is this sense of community. And I think people coming together, and I think people like looking out for their neighbors. And, you know, that's in times of hardship, whether, you know, war or pandemic or what have you, like, people do look out for each other. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. And it's also a concept that we want to bring. I mean, a Victory Garden is kind of a big fuck you to capitalism in a lot of ways. It's like we forget how abundant our land is. And the fact that we're all like going to Trader Joe's buying like apples in plastic is just such a nonsense idea. And that like, you know, community gardens are actually like can be so abundant and also just like bring up food equity. Because I mean, my brother used to live in Brooklyn and he was in a food desert, and it is getting better. But, you know, a Victory Garden implemented in the right way could really help out a lot of communities around the country.
Absolutely. I love that we, you know, we're here for music, but also, and you can't separate the two, I don't think, like music and social justice. I mean, art is such a political and personal thing. It's a beautiful, again, beautiful concept. We're going to play one more from the album. Well, one more from this album, I believe, actually. Do you want to tell us a little bit about Different Kind of Love?
Sure. Yeah, Different Kind of Love. It's kind of midway through the process. One of the rare songs we wrote at our band studio. Francois brought the piano idea in, like all good ideas and songs, the song came together really quick. And A Different Kind of Love is, it's like the difficult love. It's the love that requires compromise, time, fights, and it's the love that kind of perseveres. And so many times in songs, even as a band, we don't really write that many like love songs. You know, Cough Syrup is not a love song. That concept of a romantic love that's easy, that's a love at first sight, you know, it's beautiful to hear, and that romantic philosophy. But I think the love that prevails for us is, you know, the difficult one. So yeah, this one's called Different Kind of Love.
That's not your home, living on a prayer you used to know. Given to the weight, but don't let go. Don't let go. Golden cage, a record year. I'm hanging from a chandelier.
That was Different Kind of Love from Young the Giant here on WFUV. The first time I heard this song, I was in the car with my parents. And I remember thinking, I was like, if I ever, you know, somehow get to interview Young the Giant, I've got to ask them this. So you've got the line in there, my body tells me no, as part of it, which obviously echoes, you know, my body. I think your first single ever, I believe. Was that intentional or did it come naturally? And what is, I guess, the purpose of this callback?
It was conscious, but the original line was my heart, my body, and my soul, I believe. And then it was so close that it was like, oh, wait a minute, let's do a little Easter egg here, which is clearly not that much of a, an Easter egg, but it's, you know, it is a bit of a callback for sure. It was conscious.
Yeah, we're just trying to make sure you guys are paying attention, you know?
Mm-hmm. Are there any other hidden throughout the album?
You'll have to find them.
I don't know. That one, we've never actually done that before. But that was, I think going into, like, wanting to get back to, like, the experience of the first record, it felt appropriate to put it in that one.
There's a lot of water references in our lyrics. A lot of waterfalls and rain and rivers, and we do have a song "Ships Passing" on this album. So I don't know.
It's not quite yacht rock; it's scow rock.
Yeah.
But just in keeping with the kind of nature theme, you know, we're talking gardens, we're talking water. If you look at an album as representative of, you know, a season of a band, like what season would you say that you're in now, or what season are you, you know, embarking on as Young the Giant right now?
I'd say we're in our spring. You know, this is this moment, a kind of a renaissance for us, I think, as a band, and that we've really found a deep love and joy in writing music together. Mm-hmm. And so often, especially when you do this for a long time and the stakes get higher with every record, you find yourself kind of like dreading writing because it's so scary and daunting, mm-hmm. and you have to beat it the previous thing. But we find ourselves at this unique place where our instinct and our experience are kind of like on level playing ground, and allows us to kind of move and adapt with ideas very quickly. And we're all on the same page for, you know, everything, I think, with this band. So yeah, definitely the spring.
Blooming. Things are blooming. yeah, it's beautiful. And we're talking about the making of the album, your writing process, this trust you've built and your friendship. How does that translate live? Like, y'all are heading out on tour for this album. Is the magic still there? Like, when you step out on stage, you know, how does it feel these days?
As Samir was saying, it's spring season. I think we're kind of, for me, it's like almost like a harvest in a little bit. Like, we've done all the hard work. We've planted the seeds. We've watched it grow. And now we get to go and take these songs out and share them with people. We've been really focused on just elevating our live show. Like, we're a great live band, and I'm so proud of it. But we've got 6 records to pull from. So we're very consciously thinking about the best fan experience. And, you know, we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of Home with a Strange at the same time. So we also want to celebrate that and put these new songs out there and give the fans the best experience that they can have.
I was having this conversation with my wife, and my daughter was like, she just started piano, right? She's like 5, right? She's had a couple lessons. And then I was like, oh, yeah, have you played this one? She's like, yeah, like, I already know that one. Like, I got it. And trying to be like, oh, like, you know, like, Baba still plays piano. Like, we're always trying to improve, right? Like, there's always more to learn. Like, you might be the best jazz pianist out there, but you've never played, I don't know, another like metal piano. I don't think metal piano exists, but my point is like, to Jake's point, there's nothing more fun for me, at least, I think for a lot of these guys, to be on stage, to play in front of people. It never gets old. It really doesn't. It's such a privilege, and I feel so grateful for it. And I'm just so stoked to keep getting better and better and better in all those things and everything that encompasses the performance on stage.
Yeah, and I think there's like moments throughout this record, like with different kind of love, like the I'm gonna be okay chants. Like, I can just imagine like being in a field with people and everyone singing along. It's so like built in.
I think the record as a whole actually really showcases the strongest parts of our band. I think when we were younger, as I said earlier, the first record did feel like a very public puberty for us. We were still trying to figure out how to play our instruments. And I think because of that, like, we went on this journey of sonic exploration and trying to figure out how to write songs, who we are as songwriters, how we sculpt sonics. But this record, Brendan O'Brien, our producer, really lent into our strongest parts. And I think we were also ready to receive that and be okay with like having, you know, an end bridge for a song that could be an anthem. And we're not as daunted by that as maybe he checked in on us on the third record, and that's the last thing we wanted.
Well, we're going to end with actually an older one here, Mind Over Matter. I would love to know, why did you decide that you wanted to play this one for us today?
You know, that song is a good reminder for us as a band to just continue to believe in ourselves. It's a song that we released 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when we released it, it didn't really have the impact. It didn't really have an impact, actually. We put it on and didn't really do much. And it was only kind of 8 years later after the song's release that it really kind of reached a point and a place where it's become now our most like successful song.
Wow.
You know, just goes to show you, if you do something that, you know, you believe in and you don't apologize for it, and you stick to your guns and believe in yourself, there's a chance that you will find an audience. It might not be now, but it'll be maybe in a decade. And that's, you know, so that's a good reminder for us.
Yeah, it's funny how you put art out in the world and then it takes on a life of its own. You can't control what happens once it's out there. Thank you so much for being here, guys. It's truly such a pleasure. And congratulations on the album. I am so, so thrilled for this, for you, and for everyone to get to hear it.
Thank you so much.
We're going to close off. This is Mind Over Matter by Young the Giant on WFUV.
To any of us, don't change the subject. I'm heavy on your love. I miss that train, New York City, hooray! Fly to East LA in big jet planes. You know you're on my mind. If the world don't break, I'll be shaking it, 'cause I'm a young man after all. Ooh. And when the seasons change, will you stand by me? 'Cause I'm a young man built to fall. It's heavy on my chest. All the lights are glow, Tokyo stars. Go to watch the show, curtains closed. I'm watching you this time. And if the world don't break, I'll be shaking it, 'cause I'm a young man after all. And when the seasons change, will you stand by me? 'Cause I'm a young man built to fall. Ooh, I miss that train, New York City, rains. Fly to East LA in big jet planes. You know you're on my mind. Tokyo snows. Go to watch the show, curtains closed. I'm watching you this time. Mind over matter. You know you're on my mind. And if the world don't break, I'll be shaking. Change, will you stand by me? 'Cause I'm a young man built to fall.
That was Young the Giant performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to the band for joining us in our studio and to Concord Group. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Aaron Merriman, and James Higgins. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Liv Grant and Heather Jones. Megan Suma is our executive producer, and our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV live sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist, band, album, or song. Episodes drop every Monday. Please rate and review the show if you like what you hear so other music lovers can find it. You can also catch audio and video of FUV live sessions at WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Sam Sumter.